Good afternoon, folks. That time of the day again. Time for the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and Talk 99.1 FM. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, and I'm joined in studio, as always, with my trusty executive director, John Schneider. John, welcome.
Thanks, Sam. Happy to be here.
Hope you had a nice Christmas.
Yes, I did. Thanks.
Good. And we have our producer, dazzling dandy Daryl Grandy.
Sam, good afternoon, Sam. How are we doing?
Good afternoon. Good morning. My Christmas was lovely. We're going to ask our listeners how theirs was as well. But yes, it was it's great to be back.
Great to have you back, Sam.
Well, and we're joined in the studio today by our special guest and someone who's a good friend of the show, and more importantly, is a good representative for the people of Allegheny County and Washington County out there in Harrisburg, and that would be state representative in the 46th. Legislative District, Jason Urtitai. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be back, especially a few days after Christmas. It's nice to get out of the house a little bit, but it was great to spend time with the little ones this year.
Well, wasn't it? Yeah, I mean, you added a second one this year.
Yeah, so I have a 4-year-old and a 4-month-old for this Christmas. It was great. I think this is the first year that my 4-year-old actually understood opening presents, and she was very excited. And my 4-month-old was just happy to have a pacifier.
You know what that So you get no sleep and get woken up early when you do get to sleep.
It was actually funny. My 4-month-old woke me up at 5 o'clock in the morning on Christmas, and my 4-year-old slept till 7:30.
Oh, wow.
So we sat there. We finished watching Red One, which was I like The Rock, so we watched The Rock. That movie is a Christmas movie. She enjoyed all the visual aspects of it. But yep, 5:30 in the morning, we're watching TV, waiting for my 4-year-old to get out of bed, which I never thought was going to happen.
Well, hey, what's your movie critic's opinion? Was it worth watching?
It was a bit long. It was an interesting take on Christmas. I'd say, you know, out of 5 stars, it was probably like a 3.
Okay.
Definitely wasn't the best movie, but it wasn't terrible.
Well, hey, listen, if you can, the way I judge movies and things like that, if I can forget where I'm at, you know, and all the other things that are going on in the world, and just be able to enjoy, then it's well worth it.
It's the escapism, right?
Exactly.
You're here
for
the escapism.
Exactly.
I mean, if it has a message that reminds you where you're at, then how effective is it? You know?
Exactly.
Right.
Well,
but
hey, I fell asleep. I actually started watching it on Christmas night at about 8 o'clock. 20 minutes into it, I fell asleep.
Oh, a two-parter.
Yeah. So my wife woke me up at like 10 o'clock and asked me if I was ready for bed. And I'm like, the movie's over. I'm like watching the credits go by. So I had to go back and rewatch it. So that's why I say, you know, 3 out of 5. It kept my attention.
Well, that was why it was a little long. You watched it 1.5 times, you know? Oh, my gosh. Well, folks, we hope you all had a very Merry Christmas and a Happy Hanukkah for those that celebrate. And, you know, this is going to be our last show of the year, you know, because the next time you hear us, it'll be the new year. It'll be 2025. And so we thought we'd have an interesting show today. We want to talk to Jason a little bit about what he sees or what he believes may happen or occur here in Harrisburg this year. You know, Democrats are coming back again with what they termed their humble majority, which is a 1-seat majority. But there are some new faces there. And Jason, tell us a little bit about what your expectations are for 2025 in Harrisburg.
So, Sam, I think this year in 2025, you know, the House comes back at 102-101 with the Democrats having the majority. You know, I don't see a whole lot happening this year. We have a very light session schedule this year. It's less than 60 scheduled session days. We've already got the schedule out. Typically, it's closer to 85 to 100. Now, they could always add session days, but coming out of the gate, this is a very, very light session schedule. And you look at it, so we get sworn in the first Tuesday of January. We're back, I think, the last week of January, the first week of February for the governor's budget address, then off all of February, most of March for budget hearings. And then back for a week in March, maybe a couple weeks in April, a couple weeks in May, and then the whole month of June. And that's pretty much it. The fall is very light. It doesn't seem like we'll do very much legislative work probably until April. So I don't expect a whole lot to get done legislatively this year, which is surprising because usually the first year of a 2-year term is where, you know, you like to come out of the gates pretty heavy with a lot of your top priorities. And I just don't see that as a possibility this time around with the light session schedule and the limited amount of days that we're going to be in Harrisburg. It's just, I don't see it happening.
And remind our listeners who sets the schedule.
So in the House, the Speaker of the House sets the session schedule days. Now, I'm sure that's done in consultation with the majority leader, but the Democrats control the calendar. So they set the days, they set the schedules, they tell us when we're there because they have the majority. In the Senate, the Republicans have the majority. I haven't looked at their schedule. I imagine they'll have more days. I think they just did the first half of the year. I don't think they did the fall part of their schedule. So we'll see. Again, we have divided government for another term. We'll see how it winds up. The last term seemed like everything got done during the budget time. Nothing really got done outside of that. So look for a lot of action in June. You'll see the Senate Republicans and the House Democrats probably lay some of their markers in the sand in early April and May. And they'll start pushing priorities probably the second or third week of June. And we'll see if we can get a budget done. I'm not optimistic that it'll be done on time. Revenues are coming in less than expected. I think the last time we were here, we talked about this past year's budget and how they spent all of the one-time money on recurring expenses. So this year's budget's going to be very expensive because all that surplus that we had is gone. So with that said, they're going to have to figure out a way to balance this budget. And I'm not optimistic they're going to be able to do that on time this year.
That's going to be very interesting. And I'll tell you why, because you have Governor Shapiro is going to look to be wanting to start his reelection campaign here in 2025. And, you know, while he's fond of talking about getting crap done, they really haven't gotten much done.
No. And when you look at it too, he's a PR machine. That's what he does. It's not about the substance. It's about taking what little bits that you get done and glorifying it to the press and to his social media influencers. There was a Christmas or a holiday event where he invited all the social media influencers to the governor's mansion. And he was saying on the microphone, and anyone can go watch the video of it. I ended up watching it too, saying that if it wasn't for his influencers, they never would have solved the unconstitutional education funding problem that we had. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, dude, you didn't do anything.
Right.
I was on that commission. You basically abstained from voting and getting involved until the very end when the Senate, I think it was the Senate Democrats and the House Democrats, wanted to go nuts and spend $14 billion more, basically double the amount of spending that we have on education. God only knows where that money would have came from.
Wow.
But he was actually touting it thanks to his social media influencers and getting that message out there. Again, anyone go watch this video. I'm not making it up. But you talk about getting stuff done. I don't know what's really gotten done. It's just glorified messaging.
I would have to agree with that. I mean, his sole claim to fame is when you had the crash of the gasoline tanker, you know, in the collapse of I-95 there. You know, in about 10 days, they got a repair. They didn't get the whole thing fixed, but they got a repair job done that was that lasted long enough to be able to have traffic start to move again until they were able to finally repair it later on. But other than that, I mean, this guy still has, you know, Reggie tied up in court.
Yeah, which I don't understand that. I mean, we just see New York just doubled. Basically, they're going to double their energy taxes this year. Does anyone else want to pay any more for the electricity bill? Oh, and by the way, Allegheny County, I know Sam and I were talking about this before we went on the air, but hey, guess what? Your property taxes are going up too. So why? Yes. Let's add some more to it.
Yes. Yeah. Regular listeners of the show know that county council, on the behalf of the county executive, passed a 36% tax increase, which will go into effect here next week, January 1st of 2025. So the tax bills will be coming out in the month of January. And you'll get to see the tax increases that are going to affect you and your families for 2025 and moving forward, just in time for municipal elections.
Oh, yeah. It's a perfect just remember that when you're looking at your primary ballots and who's running against who as we get into this upcoming election. When you sit there and think about that. And again, you know, when you look at Governor Shapiro, who won't give up on the Reggie, which wasn't even his idea. Like, he could have very easily just taken a win on that and just said, I'm done. But no, he still continues on it.
Well, and they claim, I talked to someone the other day who claims that, you know, he's really not in support of Reggie. He's just in court on this, trying to defend it because he doesn't want a limit on the governor's powers. Well, look, I think it's clear that if you enter into something like that, it needs to go before the legislature.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's still a tax at the end of the day. And the taxing authority is in the hands of the legislature, not the governor. I think that's a pretty cut and dry case. I think we've won a few court cases on that, but it just always seems to be appealed. So we end up in the same situation over and over again.
Well, and that's the thing, the same thing with the school funding. You know, Commonwealth Court ruled that the current method of funding the schools was unconstitutional, blah, blah, blah. But they didn't provide any path forward or any way as to, you know, how to address it, which throws this whole thing up in the air. And I think the thing that boggles my mind is that as somebody who pays school taxes, you know, but doesn't have any children, you know, in school, the whole thing that boggles my mind is that the answer to all of these folks is just to spend more on education, and it's never about the results.
Nope. And when you look at it too, so we have three basic education funding formulas that the state uses right now. Mm-hmm. Most of the money flows through the first one, which was set up, I don't know, at least
1948 or something. Was that?
It's been a while.
Okay.
And then we have the second one that we did during the first commission, I think back in 2015, 2016. And now we have this third one that we just did with this latest basic education commission. You can tweak it around the edges all you want, but it doesn't solve what, you know, what people would call the problem. And again, if you read the court case, it's not about how much money, it's about how you fund schools.
Right.
And it was always portrayed by the media and by the Democrats is we just need more money. Like the pie has to be bigger for everyone. And that's fine. But unless you're going to go in and figure out, all right, how are we going to improve our reading scores, our math scores, our science scores, you can keep throwing money into the blue abyss and it's not going to make any difference. And we've done this. So since Tom Wolf, since I've come into office, I think we've added, gosh, like $4 or $5 billion in money to education. And our scores keep going down every year. And we have less students in the system.
And what puzzles me is that, you know, there's always a lack. There's all this bragging about how much they funded education, but you never hear them talking about, well, how much of that has actually made it to the classroom?
Well, they don't care because it's a talking point. It's what sounds good in the newspaper and on the news and gets, it's a polling. It's basically, that's what it is. What can I get the most votes for? I think people are starting to wake up to the fact that these schools are funded adequately and they are funded at record levels. And they're not getting, their kids are not getting the education that they should be getting.
Right. And then they sit there and they complain and they'll talk about a disparity between school districts. But people move to go to a municipality or to a neighborhood or to a school district where they believe their kids will get a good education. You know, so when you look at the state's share of funding, the state spends more to take and support a school in, say, Duquesne than they do in Upper St. Clair. But the difference in funding there is the property values in Upper St. Clair and property taxes generate much more of the cost of that education.
And that's why local elections matter, not just for school boards, but for your municipalities. If you want to bring in more of a tax base, then try to do that. Like try to work to actively do that. Work with your school district, work with your school board to recruit what you want to create a more diverse tax base to create that extra revenue so that you don't have to raise taxes to the index every year and then count on state funding every year. Or here's a novel idea. Go back and look at your expenses and come up with a vision for what you want your school to be. If you're terrible at reading, then let's focus on reading. If you're terrible at math, let's focus on math. Let's figure out how to turn the ship. But if you look at the way schools spend their money now, they're so top heavy. They're administratively heavy. And why is that? We have less students than we have in the system before, but we have more top administrators making big money. So we've got to figure out a way to improve our scores. And these school districts really need to start looking at this because at some point in time, the state just doesn't have the money to continually, you know, increase the funding by $500 million and $1 billion every year if the test scores aren't going to go up. Because with local control, you have local visions and local missions and you have local control over how your school is run to meet the state standards. And if you're not doing that consistently over time, then you need to consider making some changes.
Yeah, we have some excellent school districts here in Allegheny County. We also have some which, you know, like in the city of Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh Public School District, and others that certainly, you know, could use some improvement here. And, you know, look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I have all the answers, but I know that the way that we're currently addressing it certainly is not the way to move forward.
We've done this under the Wolf administration for 8 years, and it seems like we're on pace to do it for another 4 years under Shapiro, and it's not made any difference. You can't tell me anywhere where the scores have really gone up or things have been improved anywhere after spending all this extra billions, with a B, billions of dollars just from the state. I mean, there's probably billions more coming locally from local property taxes. So I would make the argument that, look, you don't have anything to lose by trying something new here because you can't really do any worse than what you're doing now.
Well, no, look, you had had a program that you were pushing that had to do with reading.
Right.
You know, now what's happened in regard to that?
So we did come to an agreement at the end of last session, and about half of the bill went into law, but none of it was funded. So we created a literacy council, which has to be constituted here shortly, and they'll put out their list of recommendations on reading curriculum for schools, screeners to use, That all has to be done by June of 2025. And then school districts can elect to do it or not to do it, but the major portion of the bill was the funding aspect of it to help pick up the cost to make these changes so people could go get the training they need. Teachers could, or schools could pick curriculum and get the books mm-hmm. and the material that they need. And look, there's a phase in time. It takes a year just to get everybody trained and up to speed on this. But without the funding aspect of it, you really aren't dangling the carrot for any school district to make any changes.
Right.
Because they're just going to say, well, we just bought curriculum a couple years ago. We know it's not backed by science and doesn't work, but we spent all this money on it, so we're going to use it. That's legitimately the excuse I get from some of the superintendents who tell me why they won't make the change.
Yeah, and you question, well, why'd you buy it in the first place?
Yeah.
You would think that some due diligence would have gone into investigating this in the first place and perhaps some testing to determine before they spent taxpayer dollars. And that goes back to something Milton Friedman said, is that, you know, the worst way to spend is when you're spending other people's money, you know, on other people's things, okay?
And that's why local school board elections matter. Your school board should be, they should have a committee on curriculum. They should be working in tandem with your school superintendent on constantly reviewing their material to see if it's up to date. Is it working? Is it not working? And then there is a pretty big lobby out there for curriculum where they're selling books and all these other things to schools. And sometimes they come in, they offer you a steak dinner or a flashy, let's go to a Steeler game, that sort of thing. And it feels good. So you're like, hey, I like it. Let's do it. But in reality, you need to get back to, okay, what scientifically works? What's been proven by data over a period of time that helps these kids learn how to read? And we know what that is, but we need to get the schools to start making these changes because we're falling behind. You know, I think there were six other states this last year who actually invested in early literacy. And they weren't Republican states. They were Democrat states. And that's what I was trying to push on the governor and the Democrats. Is like, listen, like, you guys are falling behind. Like, New York's doing it. Massachusetts has passed a big one. Matter of fact, I was in Oklahoma City last month, and I was talking to one of the Democrat reps from Mississippi who was in complete shock and awe of the fact that this was a Republican-led initiative in Pennsylvania and that the Democrats were the ones who were not on board with it. Like, he just could not get that through his head and understand. He's like, this is a Democrat initiative. Why are Republicans running it? And I had a really good conversation with him about that to explain how messed up and weird Pennsylvania politics really are.
Yeah, it certainly is. Well, listen, you're giving us something for us to look forward to. You're here in 2025. Let me take a few minutes to look back to 2024, because, we have had some really, you talk about earthquakes of stories here.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm old. I forget all kinds of things, but who can forget, the first attempt assassination on President Donald Trump here, just a few miles north of here in Butler,
right?
July 13th.
I know that was only not even 6 months ago.
Right. Again, it was a local rally. So many of the people that we know,
right,
and care about and interface with regularly were up there, right? And I didn't attend. I had other plans that evening, but I was getting ready for the other plans, and I came out of the shower, and I heard the radio. I had the rally playing on my phone.
Yeah.
And I heard, and they're talking about the president being shot. And you're like, oh my God, right? And so that was crazy. Now, that's certainly a big story, and how the president handled it.
Right.
My gosh, he just showed up.
The timeline is weird because that was right before the RNC.
Right.
So you had that. That was right before Biden dropped out.
We'll talk about that.
This really odd storm of major historic events happening, like once in a lifetime historic events happening, almost bam, bam, bam. And it was just a really weird sequence to, speak from the perspective of someone who talks about it every day on our morning show, just to have all these different things just fall into the lap of the American people.
Well,
it happened here. The assassination.
Let's go back a little bit, okay? Right. As we exited the spring.
Right.
Joe Biden was doing poorly in the polls,
mm-hmm.
And that's because people felt that the economy wasn't what the Democrats were claiming it was. So Trump had this momentum.
Yeah.
You go into the June 29th debate,
mm-hmm.
We've never been that early.
Exactly.
Right.
And I don't think there's ever been one before the conventions.
Yeah, and I still think, this is just me talking. I think at the end of the day, it was purposely set up that way so that they could replace the president at the time. Otherwise, what's the benefit of having a debate that early?
I agree with you, but you know, folks, we don't know what the real story is yet. But you're certain to find out in the next couple of years when all the books and the stories come out, okay? But you know, Biden was supposedly only supposed to run for one term, and he was supposed to be just the bridge to get them over the top, because in 2020, Bernie Sanders, you know, was winning the primaries, and Democrats were terrified that if he would be the candidate, they were so looking forward to try to take out and defeat President Trump. So James Clyburn, congressman from South Carolina, steps in before the South Carolina primary because Biden had lost the first primaries in Iowa and in New Hampshire. And, you know, he speaks up. Biden cruises to a victory, and all the other Democrat opponents, you know, Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, they all drop out. So, but Biden throws them a curve and decides he's going to run for reelection here in 2025, in 2024. Now, that's despite all of us who watched, who could clearly see that this guy was diminished, right? So to your point, Jason, I absolutely believe you're correct that somebody, that they intended to use that as a way to try to replace him.
Well, you see all the articles coming out now. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal, I think last week, detailing how they had to handle President Biden in his first year in office, and how his handlers and staff, like everything had to be pointed, like, and very watered down for him, like even his schedule. So, but I mean, in getting back to the just the election cycle in general, this will probably be the most studied election cycle in the history of the United States, just because of all of the things that happen.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because here, hey, look, we go from this debate where it became clear to the American people that Joe Biden was not fit to serve another term. So President Trump's polling numbers increased, his momentum grew. Then he soars, he goes to the rally here, he holds up in Butler. The attempted assassination, when President Trump rose to his feet after that, pumped his fist in the air with blood streaming down his face underneath an American flag. That's an iconic picture there, okay? When he did that, I mean, folks are looking at it. I was one of them and said, it's over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy, you know, the courage under fire that he showed, you know, all this, I mean, just, I it was over, okay? But then, just a little over 2 weeks later, Joe Biden drops out, and he throws the Democrats a curve.
Right.
The people that forced him out, because the Democrats had forced him out, and it's coming out. People like Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama, they were wanted him out, but they intended to hold some sort of mini primary to pick another candidate. But Joe Biden threw them a curve in less than 30 minutes after he dropped out, announced that he was endorsing Kamala Harris to run for president. And so that set off a whole new thing. And then it shook up the race. You're injecting a new candidate there. And then the Democrats started with their whole Brat Summer deal, okay? And she was avoiding the media like crazy, right? Wouldn't have an interview or anything like that. And then you started to get a little bit concerned, because the media was telling us how great she was.
Yeah, wasn't it like almost 40 days into her announcing before she did a single sit-down interview, and the interview only lasted for, what, 18 minutes? And she went to CNN?
Her and Tim Walz, yes.
Yeah. I mean, yes. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen, where you announce and all of a sudden nobody interviews you. Nobody talks to you for the biggest job on the planet. Like, it made no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, it doesn't make sense to folks like us, but it made complete sense to the handlers that were handling her. Because every time she did go out and speak on the record, I mean, it was bizarre, you know. And she fumbled these things. So that it was incredibly interesting while that first started, until, you know, you could get some momentum going again. Okay, so here you had the Republicans who had been running and been running all the money they raised, paying for television ads, running against Joe Biden. And the whole bit, and now all of a sudden Biden is not, you know, the candidate, okay? And I'm telling you what, folks, you pay attention here, because there's investigations into Democrats Act Blue, but how she raised over $1 billion in just a few weeks, you know, that's going to be a book, or if not an FBI investigation, unto itself.
Yeah, they were saying that international money, which is not allowed to be accepted, was being accepted by ActBlue through gift cards. Look, there's investigations coming. I'm sure they're going to get to the bottom of this, but it has been documented. I think it's been talked about in several articles that are out there now. But you talk about some weird stuff going on, and I can't remember. You know, when did the Kangaroo Court in New York?
Oh my gosh! Yes.
I mean, when they ruled on Trump for that, I mean that was ludicrous anyway. But I mean, you throw that in the mix too, because that kept getting delayed, and then eventually.
We'll talk about that after the break. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, folks, again, who could have imagined living through what we just lived through in 2024? And my gosh, we're only in the summer here. Wait till we come back after the break and we talk about the fall. Folks, we'll be right back after the break here on The Elephant in the Room on WJAS, 1320 AM and Talk 99.1 FM. Folks, welcome back to The Elephant in the Room. We're here with State Representative Jason Ortizai, John Schneider, our executive director, and Daryl Grandy, our producer. And we're just recapping and talking a little bit about some of the strange things that happened here in the past year in 2024. And we're just talking about what we all saw play out in real time in this presidential race. And Jason, you were talking about, please go ahead.
We were talking about the court case, the RICO case in Georgia, how that came to be with Fannie Willis, and then how quickly that fell apart with her corrupt dealings with one of the lawyers that she had hired.
How about
to bring
that?
In.
She hires a guy, pays them over $600,000+. He takes her all these trips all around the world, and she supposedly pays him back with cash.
Cash.
Who? Look, folks. I mean, listen. If you're like almost anyone else I know, you write a check or you Venmo them or something like that. Who handles all these people cash?
Especially as a district attorney or attorney general.
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
I mean, it was. But I mean, and then look. I mean, this. Everyone knows these whole things were all ginned up with the intention of derailing President Trump's return to power. And New York, you look at the case. I mean, they're trying. Alvin Bragg took a case that, talk about bookkeeping, okay, that was only a misdemeanor. And a matter of fact, really, having somebody sign an NDA is not a crime.
No.
Okay. But the statute of limitations had run out on that. But he creates this novel theory that it was all to hide another crime, is unable to articulate that during the court case. Okay, on what that other crime was, charges him with 34 counts because, get this, folks, the Trump organization was paying their lawyer on his invoices and then taking and counting it under legal expenses, right? Oh my gosh, woe is me. I guess in the Adobe system there was no drop-down box for hush payments, right? I mean, it's insane. But so they took it and they... Alvin Bragg charged him with every count. Even the controller said, no, I'm the one that paid this. I'm the one that decided where this goes. But they did it to Trump just so that they could run around and claim he's a convicted felon.
And that worked out really well for the Democrats.
Yes.
Didn't it? I mean, they sold a lot of T-shirts, I'm sure. And the Republicans did too, because that mugshot, I tell you what.
That was in Atlanta.
Yeah, it was in Atlanta. I mean, that mugshot was the most viewed image on the planet in history. Yes. I mean,
well,
that,
until the one, I think. I don't know how they, until the one in the assassination attempt.
Oh, yeah. That one.
I mean, I think those, but no, you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah, he gave them that great shot there. And hey, and Trump, had fun with it too, and sold stuff with it.
Oh, it's
sold merchandise.
I mean, what, this was this was season 8 of Trump. And I mean, it was season 8 was the best, man.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know what 9, 10, 11, and 12 are going to bring, but season 8 was very entertaining.
That is great. That's a great take on that.
You can always count on a show with President Trump. I mean, look, if you look at how people are feeling after the election, I think noticeably you can tell people are more upbeat, more optimistic.
Absolutely.
About what's to come. I mean, I remember the Trump years pre-COVID. There were people out eating in restaurants all the time. People were happier. Economy was humming along. You could just tell, like, the overall sentiment of just being optimistic.
We were back. America was back, baby.
It was like, this is hopeful. Like, that ambition to start your own business, that entrepreneurship, that creativity, this just the stuff that you kind of felt over the last 4 years is just like, we've been focusing on the wrong things. I think that's back now. People are just they're excited to see what's to come. And, you know, President Trump in his first term, you know, delivered on a lot of his promises. And, you know, I look forward to a lot of stuff happening on day one right out of the gate. And then we'll see what the legislature does.
I'll tell you what, the optimism is definitely back. You know, I'm excited. I know a lot of folks are. But I'm also a little bit concerned here because what we're finding out is all of the numbers and the things that we were told about the economy by the Biden administration are turning out to have been lies, okay? We saw earlier in 2024, there was a big adjustment that had been made by the Fed, which said that reduced the number of jobs that Biden supposedly had created in the previous year by over 800,000. Now we get information that was released by the Philadelphia Fed that said our second quarter here, we were actually net negative jobs, you know, and took away so the supposed gain of 653,000 jobs. No, we didn't gain any jobs. Yeah. We actually lost jobs in that entire quarter, right? So who knows what we're going to find underneath the hood when we look inside here when President Trump takes office here on January 20th.
Well, and that's part of the shenanigans that go on that went on with this administration. Look, you know, you put out the number of jobs created, and it hits the cable news networks, it hits the newspaper, it hits the media everywhere, and everyone's excited to see this big number. But to your point, what they don't see is 6 or 7 months later down the road when they do the revision, and that number goes from 100,000 to zero. Yeah. Nobody sees it because nobody's paying attention to it. It's all propaganda, and it also goes back to the trust that people have in their government. If they can't trust you to give them accurate data, then what are you really doing here? And then you're doing it for political purposes, which you should not be using the government for political purposes, especially around jobs created and those. I mean, the truth's eventually going to come out, but I think it speaks to the level of censorship that was present in this administration, and in particular this government. And I think you're going to see a lot of that, you know, come out over the next 6 months, well, the first 6 months of 2025.
Well, and that takes me back to, I mean, listen, you can only govern with the consent of the governed. And when the governed no longer trust you, that's a problem.
Oh, it's a big problem. You know? I mean, look at how the election year turned out. If people were so happy with the way the Biden administration and the Democrats were really running the show, do you think that President Trump would have won every single battleground state? No,
right.
He wouldn't have. People were generally not happy with the direction. They saw Kamala Harris as another term or another extension of Joe Biden because she could never articulate how she was different than President Biden, because in fact they're not. They are the same exact. They get under the Democrat power machine. You can change the coat of paint all you want. It's the same machine, you know. And I think her not being able to articulate a different vision and show the American people where the Democrats wanted to take them just said, hey, well, we're going down this path. This is where we're going. And the American people just, you know, they flatly rejected that. And President Trump had a better message this time around, and he was preaching unity. He was bringing people in. I mean, you look at it, and Republicans are building a big tent. Like, the people that they're bringing in this time, I mean, the people that President Trump is bringing in, just not for his cabinet positions, but all the way around for his campaign, they were different than the traditional Republican brings in, and different than what he brought in his first time. So I'm very anxious to see how this all comes together. Like I said, I'm filled with hope and optimism here. I'm really looking forward to what 2025 and 2026 are going to bring, especially the first 6 months of the year, because it's going to be exciting. And I think people, you get a sense of it out there.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think we're all excited and we're in anticipation, waiting to see what happens. But you know what, folks, Republicans, we have this habit of being able to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Okay. And I watch the mumbo jumbo that's playing out in DC here, you know, in the House, and in regards to the Speaker Johnson and, you know, these folks and, you know, the passing the continual resolution to allow the government to keep funding and then punting on the, you know, the debt limit. Right?
Yeah.
And these guys will screw it up. Trust me. But we only have a couple member majority there. Very, very thin. The folks need to stick together. But no, you'll get these folks that'll, you know, they'll pontificate, they'll run to cable news, they'll talk about their principles and values, and they will completely derail the entire Republican agenda, and we will get slaughtered in the midterms because we'll have shown that we can't govern. Here we have, to your point, with President Trump winning every one of the swing states, He has a mandate to make many of the changes that he talked about during the campaign, you know, to renew the Trump tax cuts, to add things in the, you know, make them permanent, and to add things like no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, et cetera. We have a mandate to take and secure the southern border. We have a mandate, you know, to restore America's defense capability and our place in the world. But yet we'll have just a couple Congress people, you know, who will take and screw things up.
Well, Sam, this is where it's important, and this, I hope all Republicans listen to this. The elected one, especially the elected Republicans out there, and just Republicans in general, it's important that Republicans focus on the big picture and the big items right off the bat.
Yep.
We're going to have disagreements. We are. You know, we're a diverse party. We have diversity of thought. We don't always agree on everything, but let's focus on the big things so we can unite the party together and get these wins. As President Trump likes to say, you know, I like to win. I'm going to get tired of winning. Well, let's win big the first couple years so when the midterms come, the American people can see that Republicans can govern, can get things done, and that the president delivered on his promises. If Republicans can do that and get through some of their small differences, we will win in the midterms. And instead of the traditional, the party of the president usually loses then, no, deliver on what you promise. Republicans unite, do the big things that you said you were going to do, and you will win. And that's where we need to focus on. While they're doing that legislatively, because I know that takes time, we need the people who are grandstanding. Fine, go grandstand all you want, but go work it out behind the scenes. Right. If you want to be on TV, but then go behind the scenes, work with the speaker, work with the president, get it done. Don't air your grievances out in public like that. It doesn't do anybody any good.
People who've been around, and many folks, they'll call us rhinos, okay? Because we understand that there are some things that just have to happen. Government needs to be funded, okay? When the Republicans fail to get in line behind, when you have a majority behind the speaker, it necessitates him having to go to Democrats to get votes. That's where the compromise is, and that's where these things that you don't like get thrown in.
Yeah, they get
worse. You can avoid a lot of that by taking and just passing it with the votes of the majority.
Yeah. We saw that at the state level all the time when we dealt with Governor Wolf. When mm-hmm. we couldn't get enough votes from the Republican caucus, we'd have to go get votes from the Democrats. Because we are the majority. It is our responsibility to fund the government.
Yes.
And I will tell you something. You know, this was the first CR that I have seen where social media really had an impact. Because you can dump that bill into AI and it'll tell you all the junk that's in there. And yes. You saw that 1,000-page bill go from 1,000.
Yes, 1,500 pages is like 150. Yeah.
I mean, you see the junk that the government spends your hard-earned tax dollars on. Everyone should be infuriated. And from now on, I hope people pay attention to these funding bills so they can really see what's in there. So when the Democrats go to the press and say, oh my God, you know, we're not funding
pediatric cancer.
Yeah, pediatric cancer. I'm like, dude, there's a bill sitting in the Senate that was already passed
by
the House.
Yeah, it was passed in March.
Like, you're crying wolf. And I think people are finally sick of the propaganda and the nonsense that comes out of these political points that these people try to score when they try to slam dunk on Republicans saying, well, you don't care about kids with cancer. That is complete and utter nonsense from the beginning. But that's how the Democrats play these games when you go from a 1,500-page bill to a 100-page bill. Like, it is ridiculous. If you're going to do a CR, and let's be honest here, let's do the CR, get it through so that the president can come in and then let him set his own budget for the new legislative session. Mm-hmm. That's the way that it should be.
Yes.
The president should not be tied to what President Biden had agreed to in the last months of his presidency, where, surprise, he's on his way to vacation again.
Yes.
For the last month.
40% of his presidency was spent on
vacation. Give me a break. I mean, in the 2,000 pardons that he's handed out to a bunch of murderers and rapists?
Yes.
That was disgusting. Absolutely. Yes, I know these people will remain in jail for the rest of their life, but there are some people who deserve the death penalty for what they've done.
Oh, absolutely. And how about signing a deal with the federal workers, like in the Social Security Administration, saying that, hey, you can continue to work from home for the next 5 years. You know, Congress is not allowed to pass a law that obligates a future Congress to something, okay? He shouldn't be able to do that either, especially in the lame duck session.
And that's the thing, is like, Everybody saw him on TV. Everyone has watched him the last 4 years. You cannot tell me that this guy is making this decision.
Exactly.
The American people, they should know who is making these decisions behind the scenes. There is no way that Joe Biden sat there and made the decision that 1,800 people were getting pardons from death row. Right. You cannot. He probably couldn't name a single person on that list.
And there are people that committed heinous crimes. You know, drug dealers that shot children and murdered children.
A 2- and 4-year-old who got shot in the back of the head, point blank. That, you tell me that guy doesn't deserve the death penalty?
Yes.
Give me a break. That's disgusting.
Progressives, ladies and gentlemen, this is what progressives bring you. So we're talking about that. So we came out of it. You know, they did the convention. Kamala Harris came out and, you know, was forced to do interviews. And she tried to avoid as much as she could. But the few that she did do turned into disasters.
Yeah, I mean, you can't tell me anybody objectively thought that she did a good job in these interviews in articulating. They were basically filler. And, you know, I hate to say it, but the word salad responses, they just, like, you ask, and I guess people get used to this, you ask a politician a question, and they never really get around to answering it. They just kind of filibuster the question. She did that for every single question. They weren't even, like, easy responses.
Right.
And then you had Tim Walz, who, you know, grew up in a
And they were trying to call J.D. Vance weird.
Yeah, like
remember
J.D. Vance
they talk about that, right?
Look, you know, you can cut it however you want. J.D. Vance is an American success story.
Yes.
You know, your kids growing up, going into the military, you know, going into venture capital, you know, having the family, his
rising
wife,
out
his
of poverty, I know, with the family problems and issues they have.
Like, this is something we should be applauding, especially these days and age. Not calling it weird. This is the American dream.
Right.
That's what we should be at. That's not weird. What Tim Walz did is weird. The guy lied about everything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that he said one honest word the entire campaign. And just the way that he talked. Like, look, I'm not judging Tim by any stretch, but you can't objectively tell me that J.D. Vance is weird and Tim Walz is everything we should be and more.
Tim Walz makes Pinocchio look like honest Abe Lincoln.
Yeah. And there was no reason to lie about that stuff. The stuff about Tiananmen Square, like, what purpose? Like, what are you trying to get some, and then serving in the, was he in the National Guard? Like, it was like stolen valor there for a little bit.
What's insane is it's like, wait a minute, you're involved in politics. You don't understand how politics works, you know? And I guess he's gotten away with it for so long. I mean, the guy became a congressman and the governor of Minnesota. Maybe he figured he could pull this charade off, but each level of government that you climb to, you undergo an entirely new level of scrutiny. You know,
I don't know why she picked him, and I would love to see the books written about this and the historical.
Oh yeah,
I would just love to see why they. I mean, I have my theories, but they're just theories.
Well, I'm glad she did instead of Josh Shapiro.
Yeah,
you know, I still think President Trump would have won Pennsylvania, but I think it would have been a lot closer.
Yeah.
Because I think Shapiro was a much better speaker, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think he probably would have outshined Kamala Harris on the trail, because he's a very good speaker. He's very good in front of a camera, and Josh is very smart. You know, I mean, a lot of people may or may not know that about him, but you know, you look at that aspect of it, and maybe she didn't want him because of that, because she thought maybe he would just oversell it. I don't know, but Tim Walz was definitely not a great pick.
Yeah. So folks, so we Republicans, we had a great 2024. We won the White House. We elected President Trump and J.D. Vance. Here in Pennsylvania, we also elected a new U.S. Senator. Yeah. Who would have thought, other than the folks sitting in this room, that Dave McCormick could defeat Bob Casey, you know, the Casey dynasty. Casey, I think he defeated Rick Santorum in 2006 by like 18 points.
Yeah.
You know, in 2018, he defeated Lou Barletta by 13 points. I mean, he won all his races by double digits, okay? And, you know, you have, you know, McCormick coming on the heels of his defeat in the primary in 2022, but saying, you know what, my country is too important for me to sit back and not give this another shot so that I can say I've done all that I can do. And, I mean, he ran an amazing, absolutely amazing campaign, you know, and did what he needed to do to defeat Bob Casey.
I mean,
unbelievable.
That's a comeback story. I mean, to lose in a primary to Oz and sit around and wait a few more years for your time. It's tough. It's tough when you lose.
Yes.
And then to come back and challenge Bob Casey, who's been in office forever, a longtime incumbent, and to run, like you said, to run the campaign that he did, and I know he probably put a lot of his own money into it. That's how much it was worth to him. There'll be studies done on how he ran that campaign and how he won.
Well, he had a great team.
He did.
You know, and his general consultants, his campaign, his general consultants, Cold Spark, you know, Mark Harris and Mike Devaney, his campaign manager, Matt Gruda, his communications manager, Elizabeth Gregory. I mean, just their whole team. Look, they did a phenomenal job.
They really
on message
did.
And Brad Todd, you know, co-author with Selena Zito. But their organization in coming up with the messaging around this campaign was unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to what Republicans need to do more often is go on the offensive. Don't sit back and play defense, especially with a long-term incumbent like Bob Casey. Like a guy shows up every 6 years to rear his head. It's like Groundhog Day. And he really doesn't do anything. He didn't do anything for the people of Pennsylvania. And McCormick really went out there with the messaging saying, hey, this is what I want to do. This is the vision for Pennsylvania. This is the vision I have for you, the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And people like that. They want to hear. They want to hear what you want to do, not that my opponent is garbage.
And here's something else that McCormick did. He took the high road.
Yep.
I mean, this was a campaign where when you think about it, you know, even the negative commercials on Bob Casey never attacked him personally.
Nope.
Never attacked his family. You never made up stories or lies like they did about Dave. Okay. I mean, hell, Casey was claiming that, you know, McCormick was funding, you know, the fentanyl that was coming across our border, funding the Chinese CCP, you know, People's Liberation Army, Navy, and Air Force. Okay. All these different things. But Dave just kept on plugging away, saying, this is a change election. This guy's been in office 18 years. He has failed to accomplish a single signature achievement in that entire time. You know, we are a consequential state, Pennsylvania. You deserve a consequential senator. And he offered himself up to be that. And as somebody who saw him, here's a guy who's been successful at everything he ever did in life. Okay. I mean, the guy who's successful, I mean, why wouldn't we want the very best person we could get representing us? The United States Senate.
I don't think you would have found a better candidate out there. I think he was here at the right time, at the right moment, even with the race against Oz. I think that was just it was a way for him to get some lessons learned and mm-hmm. see how politics is firsthand. Because it's different from afar. When you're the actual candidate, it's a different process and experience for you. But I masterful job. Him, yes. His entire team. I think that is a comeback story for the ages and a textbook case on how to take out a long-term incumbent as a Republican.
I look forward to great things from Senator McCormick. I think he's going to do some great things for the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and particularly for the people here of the Western Pennsylvania region. You know, I don't think that we've been, well-served, you know, by Casey. Folks typically never saw him.
No, they've
unless
ignored
it was
us.
Election
I mean,
year.
Anytime that I've ever reached out to his office for help, I mean, I get the same responses. And it never really anything ever came of it.
Well, I can guarantee you that's going to change, Jason.
That's good.
In 2025. You know, and so we had those. We won all three statewide row offices. I mean, my gosh, you know, we have an attorney general now.
Yeah.
You know, in Dave Sunday, former district attorney in York, Stacey Garrity and Tim DeFore both won re-election. We had a good election.
We did. Look, Stacey Garrity got more votes in the state of Pennsylvania than any other Republican candidate.
In history. Yes.
I mean, more than President Trump, more than McCormick. I mean, there's something to be said for the job that Stacey Garrity is doing in the state of Pennsylvania. She's doing a great job in the Treasury, and I'm happy to work with her. And I think it also speaks to the fact that she's everywhere. Like, she goes all over the state.
Listen, that's what it's about. Half the battle, people will say, showing up. She certainly shows up, and it showed in the election results that she got.
And she works with all of us in the legislature. Like, I randomly got a call, I want to say, a month before Election Day saying, hey, representative from her office, and then she followed up with an email saying, hey, you know, there was a big unclaimed treasury in your district. You know, can we get a quote from you for our newsletter? And she does that for Republicans and Democrats across the entire state, because something like that is not partisan politics. And she knows what job she's there to do, and she does a great job. And she also carries the Republican message very, very well. So, again, to get that many votes, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, speaking of showing up, you know, and doing the job and winning re-election, you were re-elected handily here in the 46th legislative district, and I want to take this opportunity to congratulate and thank you for putting yourself out there and You know, I think you do a hell of a job and really do appreciate everything you do on behalf of your constituents and Republicans throughout the county.
Well, thanks, Sam. It's always good to be appreciated. You know, the fifth time around. Actually, this was the sixth time around.
Oh, wow.
So I'm getting old here in Allegheny and Washington County. But yeah, I think this was the largest margin of victory for me when I had an opponent. I didn't have an opponent the last time, but this time I did. Won by 25%, which in my district is pretty good.
that is big.
So I'll take it. You know, I work hard. You know, my staff, you know, it's a testament to how hard my staff works to do constituent services, because that's an important aspect of it. But I think as a Republican, to win in the districts that I've won in, I think it's like, yes, you do have to work across the aisle, but you also have to be willing to take the hits and listen to everybody, whether it's good, bad, indifferent. And I think that's what makes me successful. And I think that's why I continue to win. And I hope that people will continue to vote for me in the future. But I enjoy working with you, whether it's the county council here at RCAC. It's great. Even though I lost a large portion of Allegheny County in the redistricting, I still enjoy Allegheny County a lot.
Well, we appreciate that. We look forward to your check in the mail. You know, usually it's me sending you the check for saying nice things. But no. You've been a tremendous supporter.
No.
We really appreciate it. Hey, you know, folks, you know, I hope you enjoyed, you know, our somewhat, you know, random recap of 2024. But for Republicans, we did have a great year. I think there's some great things to look forward to in 2025. And, you know, Jason, do you have anything you'd like to say to the folks before we close the show?
Yeah, I hope everyone had a wonderful Christmas and Hanukkah. And I hope 2025 is a great year for everyone. It certainly feels like it's going to be a wonderful year. So happy new year to everyone. I look forward to another couple years of service. And Sam, look forward to working with you in the new year as well.
Folks, from all of us here at the Elephant in the Room, that's John, Daryl, myself, and our guest Jason, please, we wish you a happy and prosperous new year in 2025. Look forward to talking to you next week. Have a great weekend.